You know, these last couple of weeks, there's been a theme that sort of keeps rolling around. It came out now last week at LifePoint. It came out last week here in our first week back. And there's this question that often sort of slips out pretty easily. And it's this question that just says, what's in it for me? What do I get out of it? What's in it for me? And Stephen, a couple of weeks ago, talked about this idea of the values of an upside-down kingdom, values that seem foreign to our world's value system. And it's hard, actually, to walk in the values of God's kingdom when we're continually subjected to these values that seem really counter to that. And it can be confusing to us. And this week, as we were reading, it was on Wednesday, we were reading John 17 and Jesus' prayer for his disciples, for his friends. If you are following in the journal, you'll remember this prayer. And Jesus is praying for them that God's glory would be revealed in them and would be revealed to them, and that there would be this tremendous unity amongst them, that the world would see that work. But there was one line in it that, as I looked at it again, it just grabbed me again. In verse 15 of John 17, Jesus prays this. He says to his father, and the context, remember, is his friends, his disciples. He says, Father, I don't pray that you take them out of this world, but rather that you protect them from the evil one. Or another translation says this, I don't pray that you take them out of this world, but rather that you keep them in this world. That you keep your hand on them in this world. And as I was looking at it, I was kind of like, what? Wait a second. Jesus, you're praying that I get kept in this world. Well, it seems to me that there was another option. And how much more attractive would the other option be, that is, take me out of the world? Like, if I have the choice, I'm looking at that and I'm like, heck, I choose the get me out of here prayer. Get me out of here. Get me out of the trial. Get me out of the suffering. Get me out of the pain. Get me out of the discomfort, the disquiet, the disconnect, the need. Get me out of the sadness. Get me out of here. How many here would honestly, probably, first choice take the get me out of here prayer? Yeah, and it looks like it's an option in there, because Jesus actually says, I don't pray that you take them out. And it's kind of like, there was the option, but I'm putting a little X by that one. And Jesus goes, my prayer is that you keep them, protect them in it. Now, then I sort of look at it and go, okay, all right. So if you prayed the in option, God, you're going to keep me in this world, then, hey, for sure I get the force field option then, right? Right? Jesus, you're praying that I get kept in the world, but that's so that I get the force field. And nothing affects me, or nothing touches me, or it's never really too negative. Or maybe I get that gift of faith, so that I can somehow muster enough faith that I can actually create my own alternate reality, and I never have to live subject to sickness or pain or trial or suffering or need. And that idea sounds so attractive. that we can muster this gift of faith so that none of this ever has to darken my door and I live this tranquil, peaceful, powerful, alternate reality. Well, I don't see that as what Jesus is praying. There's something we like to do, which is called minimizing risk, minimizing potential, minimizing danger. In fact, there's this great little film. There's a clip, it's only about a minute long out of it. The film was called Inside Out. What this story is about is this little girl named Riley Anderson. And as she's growing up, all the different emotions and all the different experiences that are playing on her. And it's sort of this view of how do we wrestle with those emotions. And to set the stage for it, this little clip is Riley's first day at school. And all the emotions are there. And the ruling, or the emotion that wants to rule, is this emotion of joy. And this is the way joy wants to run this situation. Your job is to make sure all of the sadness just stays inside that little circle so it can't mess with anything else, so that it can't actually touch any of the moments of Riley's life in this first day at school. It has to be joyful and perfect and great. And if you follow that film on, sadness escapes its little circle. You see, we actually want these little circles of all sorts of things. We want to draw circles around pain, and we tell pain, you just stay in those borders there and don't mess with my life. And suffering, you can have this tiny little circle here, but do not step outside of those borders and mess with the rest of my world. If we could script ourselves, if we could script out the negative, I wonder what we might sort of put in as our top choices, that if my life could be marked by these things, what would they be? Would we choose such things? And I just wrote down six, and maybe you'll write down these and you'll sort of go, yeah, that sounds reasonable. What if we chose comfort? I choose comfort. I choose strength. I choose strength. I choose protection. And I choose wisdom. And I choose position. And I choose provision. I wonder what we would script ourselves with, but I looked at those and I looked at them, they're all good choices. And it feels like, man, if we scripted those, we'd have this pretty great life. And here's the good news. All of those six can be a reality to any one of us. You're just like, whew, I didn't know where this message was headed. Whew, that's good news. It's great news. You can experience those six things in abundance: comfort, strength, protection, wisdom, position, provision. But you know what? That pesky little word, in. When Jesus prays, I don't pray that you take them out of the world. I pray you keep them in the world, that pesky little word in is the one that messes with it. Because if we look at comfort, man, I want comfort. I want that sense of comfort in my life. But here's the thing. We find comfort when we know sadness. There's no need for comfort if sadness never touches your life. We'll never know what comfort means. In fact, if you start looking through the scriptures, David, the great psalmist, he writes this in Psalm 94, I cried out, I'm slipping. But your unfailing love, O Lord, supported me. And listen, when doubts filled my mind, your comfort came and renewed my hope and my cheer. What did David experience first? Doubt. Doubt filling my mind. And it was in my experience of doubt that comfort came. In Psalm 119, remember your promise to me. It's my only hope. Your promise revives me. It comforts me in all my troubles. Dang it! It's that word in again. You give me comfort in all my trials. We're not offered some force field existence. We're not offered some hyper faith counter reality declaration. We're offered a meeting of the person of God in the life that we exist in. Isaiah 66:13, when God's speaking to his people and they are in a place of the deepest distress in the city of Jerusalem, God speaks through Isaiah and says this, I will comfort you there in Jerusalem as a mother comforts her child. Wow. It's not, don't worry, I'll just get you out of there. We'll find a new spot, a better spot, a peaceful spot, a whole new city. He says, no, I'll comfort you right in the middle of that situation that you find yourself in. You see, comfort comes out of distress and joy comes out of sadness. And when you watch this film Inside Out, the emotions begin to discover this reality that however much they've tried to distance sadness and push her out and marginalize her, they realize that they need sadness to understand the context of joy. In fact, it's been said that you only know sadness because you've known joy and you've experienced loss. And you only find real joy when sadness has touched your life. That pesky little word in is so small, but it changes everything. Keep us in this world. Well, strength. I want strength. I want to script my life with strength. But as I read the scriptures, it says, his strength, goodness, it's perfected in my weaknesses. There it is again, in. You mean I have to experience weakness to know his strength? Yes, 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 we do. God is our refuge and our strength. Psalm 46, and a very present help in trouble. Dang it. And 1 Corinthians chapter 1, Remember this, my dear brothers and sisters. Few of you were wise in the world's eyes or powerful or wealthy when God called you. Instead, God chose things that this world considered foolish in order to shame those who were wise. He chose the things that are weak and powerless to shame those who think they're powerful and strong. And God chose the despised things by this world and things that counted as nothing at all and used them to bring to nothing what this world considers important. Man, I want to know strength. But to know strength, I must know weakness. You see, we draw these little circles all over the place and we set up these parameters for things that we really don't want to touch our lives. But we realize later that it's not unless we've walked in them that we experience the things we long for. We live in a world that says to hide our problems, to fix them, to celebrate our victories. But Paul says this, we got to choose to boast gladly in weakness. 2 Corinthians 12, three times Paul says, I beg the Lord to take away this which was my trial. And each time he said to me, my grace is all you need. My power works best in weakness. What? Why? Why can't your power just show up in power? Why can't you just give me power and strength and all these things without making any of that touch me? No. No, my strength, that shows up best in weakness. And Paul resigns himself and says this, so now I'm glad to boast about my weaknesses so that the power of Christ can work through me. That's why I take pleasure in my weakness. What? Pleasure in weakness? But the why is because the strength of Christ shows up in that. And I take pleasure in insult and hardship and persecution and trouble. For when I'm weak, oh, that's when his strength shines so brightly. But I scripted protection. Good. Because you'll only know his protection when you've no opposition. I would rather know opposition and know the protection of the Lord than never know his protective hand. This song that was written years ago as we read that Craig led into, the story of those three young men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Their deliverance was where? In the furnace, in the fire. Isaiah 43, again Isaiah writes this, now, O Jacob, listen to the Lord who created you. O Israel, the one who formed you says this, do not be afraid, for I have ransomed you. I have called you by name. You are mine. So, when you go through the deep waters, I will be with you. And when you go through the rivers of difficulty, you will not drown. And when you walk through the fires of oppression, you will not be burned up. The flames will not consume you, for I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel. Do you hear it? Do you hear the in? You are in the waters. You are in the rivers of difficulty. You are in the fires of oppression. You are in this world. And he says, I will be with you. And if you want to go back to the book of Daniel and read the story of those three young men, you will see it so clearly. Well, my next one then is I want wisdom. I want wisdom. Well, James 1:5 says this. We will know wisdom when we know our lack. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask God, and God will grant it. But first, we've got to acknowledge that we don't have it, that my way is not best, that I don't know, that my thinking comes up short, that I don't have all the answers that I need. Oh, God, I need your wisdom. But that's so hard. For many of us, it's really hard to say, I don't know. Do you know that? In fact, one of the quick things that rolls out of our mouth, someone's telling us something, and we just sort of, for some reason, go, yeah, I know. I'm guilty of this so often, but I will tell you a story about someone else, because it just makes it so much more comfortable. I can do this because it's my daughter, and my daughter will listen to the podcast. Hi, Holly. Because she told a story about me the other night in front of friends, and it was just so fun. It was just lovely. But teaching my daughter to drive. One of the best seasons of our lives together. We are so like cut from the same cloth. It's just amazing how much conflict there can be in love. But we get in the car and I'm like, Holly, okay, I need you to, you know, turn the car. I know, Dad. Why, Holly? Have you been in the car before? Have you done this before? No, but I know. Okay, all right, all right. We'd go driving. Okay, Holly, I need you to go to second gear. I know. Okay, it's going to be like this, is it? The reality is, she didn't know, but she so desperately wanted to know that to think that someone else knew more is really difficult, because it's like showing our weaknesses. I'm horrendous at it. I like to think I should know. It's part of my makeup. But unless we're willing to admit we don't know, how do we ask God for wisdom? The Bible actually says, you want knowledge, good, then begin with the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. When the fear of the Lord acknowledges that, God, there is no one like you, no one of more knowledge, no one of more understanding, no one who gets this better than I do. So, God, I stand in awe of you. And then God goes, good, now you're at the starting place to pursue knowledge. We want position. We want honor. Goodness, our world pushes this one. 1 Peter 5, 6 and 7 says this, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, and at the right time he will lift you up. When we want position or honor, it comes from the place where we humble ourselves. It is so upside down in our world's thinking. Make yourself less. And God says, then I will raise you up. The first, those who push themselves to the front of the line, will be last. Those who are last and willing to be last will be made first. And we struggle with these things. I just want the position. You read Philippians chapter 2 and it says, you let your attitude be the same as that of Jesus Christ, who even though he was fully in the nature God, did not consider that equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing. He took on human likeness. Being found in likeness of a man, he made himself a servant. and became obedient even to the point of death. And then it says, and therefore God exalted him to the highest place and gave him a name that is above every name. But we don't want to do the conforming and the humbling and the submitting and the obedience. We just want the honor. But if our attitude's to be the same as that of Jesus, it is about going low, that in right time we might be lifted up. And provision? We want his provision. To know provision, you've got to know lack. To know provision, you've got to know lack. Matthew 6. Jesus says, listen, this is why I tell you, don't worry about your everyday life. Whether you got enough to eat, enough to drink, enough food, enough clothes to wear. I tell you, life is more important than food and your body more than clothing. Don't worry about these things saying, what do we eat? What do we drink? What do we wear? These things dominate the thoughts of people who do not believe. But your heavenly Father already knows your needs. Seek the kingdom of God above all else and live in his righteousness, and he'll give you everything that you need. So don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will bring its own worries. Today's trouble is enough for today. You see, we spend so much time and effort eradicating or minimizing danger, need, suffering, pain, discomfort, trial. We pad out our worlds and our existences. But the desire of God is that we know need. I honestly would prefer some of the experiences that I have had in seeing God's hand on my life in the midst of trial and need than never experiencing him this way. I'll give you one instance, and this doesn't happen every day. This has happened once in my wife and my own lives. We were faced with a decision pretty early on in our marriage about what our priorities would be. What would our priorities be? And it was decisions with time, it was decisions with finances, it was decisions about how we would live. And we were faced with a decision, because we had actually chosen early on in our marriage that we would tithe. We would put aside our first portion to God of all our resource. And we came to this place where that decision was put on the line. If we do this, we don't have enough money left in our budget for the groceries that we need. And wouldn't it seem right to take care of those needs first? We had a little baby girl, and she was fed on formula at this stage of her life. And doesn't she need that for survival? But yet we knew that we had a decision to make. That was, are we going to keep what we've committed ourselves to, or are we going to take care of our needs? We made a decision that we would honor what we'd said we would do. Within a couple of days of that, Donna got a phone call. Would you be willing to come and do some babysitting, some daycare stuff, and the pay for doing this couple of hours was $10. And we knew that that $10 was going to be enough to cover this tin of formula for Holly. And so Donna went and did that. But I got a phone call from Donna, and no one but her and I knew this situation. I got a call from Donna. When she came out to the car from doing this childcare, the back of our car was filled with bags of groceries. I'm not making up a story, and nor am I giving you a formula of how you should live every day. This was an experience that showed us once and for all the faithfulness of God. Definitively, I don't question his goodness, whether I eat rice or I eat steak. I know his faithfulness. The choice we face is, are we going to know him in our need? Are we going to know him in our trial? Are we going to know him in opposition? Are we going to know him when I don't know the answer? Am I going to choose to know him? Jesus says this, Father, I don't want you to take them out of this world. I don't want you to just lay out the escape plan. I don't want them to miss all that you do in the experiences. Don't just pull the ripcord. Push in. He offers help. To cry out for help, you've got to know your need. Do you know more people drown because they refuse to wave and say that they're in trouble? They will just fight that current till they go under. Stop fighting the current. Experience him in. Jesus said when he left, he would send us a helper. The word used in the Greek is paraclete. But if we're so sufficient that we don't need a helper, you'll never experience the work of His Spirit in your life. If you're so sufficient, self-made man, so self-sufficient that you just need a little tag on, you'll never, never, never experience the work of the Holy Spirit. 1 Peter, be truly glad. There is wonderful joy ahead, even though you must endure many trials for a little while. These trials will show you that your faith is genuine. It's being tested as fire tests and purifies gold, though your faith is far more precious than mere gold. So when your faith remains strong through many trials, it'll bring you much praise and glory and honor on the day when Jesus is revealed to the whole world. Paul writes to the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, all praise to God, the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, for he is a merciful Father, the source of all comfort. He comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort others. When we're troubled, we will be able to give them the same comfort that God has given us. When they're in need, I tell you what, when I'm in need, I want someone to speak to me who knows need and who's met Jesus in need. When I'm in distress, I want someone to talk to me who has gone through distress and met Jesus in distress. When I am disquieted or uncomfortable, don't come with some highfalutin, get you out of here plan. Talk to me about how Jesus met you in distress. When you're in sickness, we don't just need people who have, you know, words of faith, get you out of here. We need people who know what it is to walk with Jesus in sickness and in suffering and even through the valley of the shadow of death. Jesus said, my Father, I pray that you keep them in, that you protect them in this world. Don't just look for the out, but rather press in. God is our refuge and strength, always ready to help in times of trouble. Hebrews, the writer here, listen. Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has ascended into heaven, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold unwaveringly, firmly to the faith we profess. For you do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with your weakness. But we have one who has been through every temptation as we have in every way, yet he did not fall to it nor sin. So therefore, in the knowledge of this, let us also approach God's throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us, you guessed it, in our time of need. Jesus' prayer. Listen to his words. In fact, let's just stand together and let these words, if we change our physical position, sometimes you hear it differently. Maybe you can shut your eyes and just listen. And I don't know if you like to visualize things much, but if you visualize Jesus praying for you, he says this. My prayer, Father, is not that you take them out of the world, but that you keep them in it, that you protect them in it. For they are not of the ways of this world, even as I am not of it. But set them apart to your purposes by your truth, for your word is true. Just as you sent me into the world, I now send them into the world. And my prayer is not just for them alone, but I pray also for those who will believe in me because of their message. And may this message bring them to unity. Father, just as you are in me and I am in you, may they also be in us, so that the world may believe. I in them, you in me. So that they may be brought to complete unity. And then the world will know that you sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me. How beautiful are those words. That's Jesus' prayer for us, his friends, his loved ones. And so as we close, I'm just going to invite you, if you are in a space right now that you're wanting out, you're sick, you're looking for the out, you feel weak, you're looking for the out, you don't know what to do, you want to change the situation. If you want someone to pray with you, I'm just going to open up this space and say, let someone pray with you. But this is the prayer that I'm going to ask is prayed over you. I don't mind who's praying for you. I want you to pray Jesus' prayer. Father, I'm not asking that you remove them from this situation, but that you reveal yourself in this situation. Father, I am not praying that you remove them from this situation, but I am praying that you will reveal yourself in this situation. Because it's only when we have walked through it that we can ever offer it to someone else. Jesus' prayer is for you, and that you would know his Father as he knew his Father. That as we go out into this world, we will be bearers of his presence wherever we go, and that confidence and that knowledge. So that's how we're going to close. We're going to go out into this world. Some of us right back in the same situations we walked into here. But I'm not going to be praying, God, just give me your strength. No. God, be my strength. Be my strength. Whatever I face as I go out, it's in your hands. God bless you as you go into your day.